it's time for the End of Conversation podcast with funny man Damian Lemon and the voice of your choice, Ali Muhammad.
This is Damian Lemon, and this is In the Conversation, the podcast. Yes, yes, back at it again. Ali is away. Shout out to Muhammad. He will be back soon. In the meantime, in between time, it is you and I. One-on-one monologue, I guess. You know what it is. It's just us talking. It's a fucking sweltering hot day in New York City. Not all the way do the right thing hot, but on its way. I got a nice frosty mason jar of water over here that could be just a little colder. I didn't plan as well. I got some ice cubes trying to make it happen, and they done already melted into the spot, but you know, we move on. We keep it going. We recording. Had to turn that AC off because I don't need all of that humming in the background. It's AC season. I always remember AC season. You always, for me, it's always like, damn, I guess I can't hear the show. Or I guess I got to turn this shit up to like 100 and put the subtitles on because I need to be cool as well. But anyway, it was a hot one today and I was outside, you know, walking in that weather. But yeah. Good week. Good time. Good week. I had a good week. Nice few shows over the weekend. Over the week, actually. It was fun times, you know, running around the city. What's going on with the kid, man? Chilling, yo. Tonight, the Knicks play. Did the Knicks play the Cavs? Yeah, the Knicks play the Cavs. The Cavs beat the Pistons, so the Knicks are going to play the Cavs first game in the Eastern Conference Finals. Last night, game one of the Western Conference Finals started with the with OKC versus the Spurs. I'm sick. I missed it. I didn't even realize that they were playing, and I was around. I could have caught that. But I seen a bunch of the highlights earlier today. Wembanyama is a phenomenon. He's a force. That's going to be a good series because you got Shea and you got Wembanyama, the new generation, the two of the new young guns, the current MVP, Shea, and then Wembanyama, the cat. He's gunning for it, you know, and it just feels like Wembanyama is like, he's locking into his like villain origin. He don't mind. That's what I like about him. He don't mind being hated. I like that when I see that in a play. I saw that in Trae Young. But, you know, you don't see it as much as you used to. Everybody seems to be real kumbaya. And Wembanyama is not one of those. Not one of those. He threw one of them long, lanky elbows. Go-doom the homie's neck. And that shit was all the way flagrant foul. Like, all the way intentional. It was nothing accidental about that shit at all. Bah! Get off me. He got that energy. Fuck off me. You know what I mean? 7-12. And out here going for it, man. And he, you know, I appreciate it. I appreciate it. You could just feel the disdain. I think it adds to the fact that he's a Frenchman. So it's that, it taps into that old cliche, that old French disdain of Americans, filthy Americans. I want to take the trophy home. To my country, and I don't know what kind of accent that is. To my country, that ain't French. I don't know what it is, but you could take it on to his country, have some baguettes and a good fromage, some good cheese and baguettes, and just shit on him, you know, because he's sick. That old Shea became the MVP. Shea seems like a good guy, man. Shea's a good MVP. He bought all his teammates. Burberry trenches and AP watches. So they look like a bunch of upscale Inspector Gadgets. You know what I mean? I don't know what the trench coat thing is, but I know this has been a thing for him. So that was cool. And you know me, I ain't a pocket watcher, but I definitely did the math. I was like, yo, how much you think all this costs? How many people's on the roster times this? He spent like about $600,000. In a good looking out fund, You know what I mean? But I think that was good. It builds morale with the teammates. You know what I'm saying? But shit, I hope they set their watches for game two, because they obviously ain't know what time it was in game one. That motherfucking, you know, I won't call him Pepe Le Pew, but Young Vic. Vic ain't fucking with none of that shit. He got a grudge to settle. He got a grudge to settle. So that looks like that's going to be interesting. And Cleveland, New York could probably be real scrappy. You know what I mean? Real scrappy, old school, East Coast, you know, East Coast finals. You know, we'll see how that go. Cleveland versus New York, man. I hope the Knicks go ahead and get to the finals quietly. I think if the Knicks go to the finals, I think that shit could happen, man. We have beat the Spurs twice this season. We played them, what, three times? We got them twice. So that's pretty damn good. We played the Thunder twice this season, and they got us both times. So, I guess it's looking more like we might want them Spurs. This is a quick, while we still on some New York type of thing, shout out to all of the listeners from everywhere, but this is a quick, very New York-ass question. I saw this thing. It's like a big thing going on, because speaking of the Knicks, there's a little, I guess, a factoid or whatever, saying the last time that the workers from the Long Island Railroad went on strike, the Knicks made it to the finals. And then the workers from the Long Island Railroad went on strike just recently. It's already over, from what I understand. They done patched it up. But that turned into, I looked at that, and that kind of spun off into a whole nother story where it was like there's a back and forth about what do people call the Long Island Railroad. Do they call it the LIRR, LIRR, the Railroad, or the LIRR? The LIRR. That sounds like a Tyler Perry a piece of Tyler Perry dialogue. LIRR. But yeah, some people say the LIRR. I've never heard nobody say the LIRR. And I used to live out Long Island for a little bit, staying, you know, my people's out there, my college era years and shit. So I definitely had some times on the railroad or the LIRR or the LIRR. But I've never heard nobody. It seems like it might be a Queens thing, from what I understand. But like, these people are like really like, if it ain't the LIRR, it ain't nothing else, you know. But I had never heard this before. So if you take the railroad, if you live in Long Island, if you are somebody that calls it the LIRR, let me know, because this is new to me. This is very new to me. So it's one of those. All right, we get broad out here. We could take it from New York. We could go worldwide. We could take it, you know what I mean? Speaking of Shea, you know, young Toronto cat, another young Toronto. I don't even know if a young Toronto cat. Aging Toronto rapper Aubrey Graham, a.k.a. Drake, just dropped 3 albums on your head top. 3 joints. We was waiting for the Iceman. At least I was. I was waiting to see what the, you know, the comeback album was going to be. You know, I had high hopes for the Iceman. And shit, Iceman said, you know what? Fuck that. Hit him with a 3-piece. Boom, boom, boom. Iceman. So Iceman, Habib T, and Maid of Honor. Drake dropped 3 joints on a motherfucker. And it's interesting. I'm not going to lie to you. I'm still processing all of them, right? I'm still processing all of the joints. I was definitely looking forward to Iceman. I was locked in. I was locked in. I felt like I was doing too much, but I was locked in. I saw the little YouTube stream where he had the videos for all of the, I mean, not all of the songs, but damn near. I think he dropped maybe like 15 or maybe even more videos all at once when he dropped the shit. You know, and I was saying last week, like, it was kind of quiet. He was just like, and I said, he's probably got a lot of shit's probably going to impact at once. This is beyond what I could have expected. But he had this, he had his stream, I guess the 4th in his Iceman streams. I had never watched any of the other. I mean, I might have watched some of the very first one, but it just felt like it was just tangential. It was all over the place, and it wasn't really that interesting. And I'm not the biggest fan of stream culture, even though his streams are a little bit more elevated production-wise. So this one, you know, it was a bunch of videos of the songs that he was going to drop. And I was like, oh, shit. Quietly, I was like, damn. First of all, I can't believe I'm watching this shit. But then two, it's like, damn, this shit kind of ruining the album. I like to, you know, me and no spoilers, I kind of like to just listen to the album. But I guess this is the rollout. That's how you rolling out the album. Long story short, I watched that shit. And then maybe an hour later, midnight, he dropped three albums. I was like, shit, three albums. I was like, man, I'm not in the mood to listen to three albums right now, because I'm not going to judge him fairly, you know. But based on what I heard in that little stream, there was some shit that I fucked with. Most importantly, what stood out and is still to me the standout record is Make 'Em Pay, the joint where he sampled or he flipped the Denise Williams Free record, which is, you know, that's a banger. That was a banger back when Mike Geronimo sampled that shit for Shit's Real. But he, you know, he chopped it a little differently. And Denise Williams has always been one of my favorite singers. I always just liked her voice. You know, ever since I was a kid, I liked her voice. And funny enough, I'm surprised I guess it would have been obvious, but if we talking Denise, you know, if we talking Denise Williams, I'm surprised he didn't sample Let's Hear It for the Boy. You know what I mean? That would have made so much sense. You know, he's the boy. Let's hear it for the boy. That would have been kind of ill, but he didn't do that shit. He flipped the Free shit on the Make 'Em Pay. And yeah, that shit is hard. That's a tough one. And this is Iceman is a grudge holder's record. It's a I ain't forget none of that shit. Very Scorpio record. You know, and I say that as a Scorpio. Not that I could be all the way petty. I mean, there's definitely some of that. I definitely have every so often is the mantra of it's about the principle. But, you know, you gotta calibrate that. You know what I'm saying? You got to be aware. But it was definitely a very moody, bitter, surly album, you know. And when I first listened to it, it felt a little suspended in time. It felt like, all right, bro, it's been 2 years, you know. I was going back and forth with a couple friends of mine, and, you know, some people understood that. Other people was like, nah, I understand why he's still upset, you know, when you break it down. You know, but he got his list, and he went at a lot of motherfuckers. You know, he had his responses to Kendrick. After all this time, you know, he wanted to refute some things. Some of that shit just sounded a little silly. Like the one song where he's talking about, and I'm about to go to the Bay. I got a show out in Oakland. Yuck. Or whatever the fuck. I thought he could have got rid of that one. He ain't need that. But the bar he gave to Khaled was probably one of my favorites. He kind of chopped Khaled up. And there was so many little bars that I missed. But as time passed, over the weekend, just listening to particularly Iceman more than the others, I've grown to like Iceman. Habib T and Maid of Honor, they more of the, you know, let's get broad. You know, this Iceman was like, you know what, for the most part, we're going to just rap. We're going to rap like a motherfucker. I got some grudges. I got some shit to get off my chest. That's what this is going to be focused on. And it's kind of like, let me get the people what they have been asking for all this time. Yo, when Drake gonna just put out some shit where he's just rapping, all of the other shit, he don't need to show he can sing, or all of the little worldly shit. So he kind of did that on Iceman, and he left all that other stuff to the other two albums. And there's some shit on there. It's a lot of shit that I know is gonna be outside, for sure. I already could hear it. I could envision it. There's some records on there that I just know they're going to be rocking with. New Bestie, where he getting back into his, you know what I mean, his patois. You know what I mean? His patois bag of shit. I don't know, something about drinking that fake patois. You know what I mean? That shit work. That shit work. That shit is like Steph Curry from behind the arc. But, yeah. I'm still processing it, but overall, it's a lot. It feels more like a purge than a curated batch of work. This motherfucker's decluttering better than I am. Like, it's a lot of shit. He just like, right, put that out there too. Get that to them. Yeah, fuck it. Put it up. Upload that. And like most of his stuff, but it's better, again, because I guess with Iceman leading the charge and then having a intention, you know, that album, for the most part, save for a few records, is very consistent. And probably the other two, too, when I get to it. Again, it's just a lot of music to process. But lesser, but still, Drake has been on, I don't know, maybe from what, More Life, maybe, with this whole thing of just a lot of records, and you kind of create your own album from the album. And then as you're in the world, you will discover some of the other records that you didn't import to your own Drake record, if you understand what I'm saying. Like, Drake put out so much music similar to like Chris Brown, who I really don't follow that much because kind of for the same reason, it's just a lot of fucking music. I like to begin an album and be done with an album within a decent amount of time. I don't want to commit too much. Like, what's going on? After a while, it starts to feel like homework. But what happens a lot of times with those type of albums is there might be a couple records that you know that you already added to your playlist, but then there's the other records that other people like. And if I'm out in the world and I hear them, it becomes almost like Shazam music. You know, not really for those two because I know what they sound like. I was like, oh, this must be a Drake record. I forgot. You know, and it's like, oh, okay, this was on the Dark Lane demos. I forgot. Like, I remember hearing Chicago Freestyle out in the street one day, and I was like, the whole crowd was singing. And I had known I'd heard it before, but it wasn't some shit that I was listening to on heavy rotation. But the way the crowd was responding, I was like, let me go back and get this shit a spin. You know, so we're going to see. I see a lot of people, seems like Janice Shut the Fuck Up is the big record out of the three pack. And initially it wasn't anything that stood out to me. It's fine. It's fine. It's kind of low tempo or whatever, but seems like this the one that the people are responding to. Let me know what y'all think of these Drake projects. Let me know what stands out. Is it too much to wade through, or are you just like, fuck that, more life, more music, give it to me. I want to hear all of this shit. Let me know. And if you got a favorite album out of the three, let me know. Earlier today, I went to go see the movie Is God Is, the new feature by first-time feature director Alicia Harris. She came out the gate guns blazing, boom, bow, like this. This is how you kick off a career as a director. This is a really good movie. I didn't really know exactly what to expect. I just knew I was going to be locked in when I seen Kara Young was one of the leads. It's Kara Young playing Racine and Mallory Johnson playing Anaya, you know, these two twins. And basically, the plot is it's like two twins that are getting revenge for their mother for something that happened to their moms and something that happened to their mother and them that really impacted the family and their way that they see life, the way that they live in life, the way that they see the world and the way that the world sees them, you know. And it's really well done. Like the story's well done. The way it's shot is really stylized, you know, like it feels like it has a patina to it, not a sepia, but some type of filter on it. Just, it feels real, like, feels like film. I'm not sure if it is film, but you could kind of almost feel like the humidity in the outdoor shots, you know. It's definitely like heavy Black girl aesthetic, there's like long braids, long nails, like just certain ways that the scenes are blocked, you know, to where it almost looks like portraits. There's moments when like they go see their mother, right? And the way that the first establishing shot of their moms, who's played by Vivica Fox, she's, you know, laying in the bed, you know, due to her condition. And she's got these, like, maybe four synchronized home attendants tending to her. Everything from, like, you know, lighting and putting a joint in her mouth so she could get high to braiding her hair. But, like, just really the caretakers. But the way it's shot is fly. The blocking is crazy, you know. And then, like I said, the cast, you know, it's outstanding. So you got... Yeah, you got Carrie Young, Vivica Fox, Sterling K. Brown, Erica Alexander, Janelle Monáe, and more. Like, it's really good. I don't really want to give you any spoilers or anything. It's like, just overall, it's very much like hurt people, you know? Like, that's kind of, I would say, one of the presiding sentiments of the whole thing. But, man, the way that it's shot and the way that it plays out is really good. I really enjoyed it. Again, I had no expectation. When I seen that Kara was in, I'm like, I'm going to check this out. But I had no expectation. But I really, really enjoyed it. I thought it was great. I saw it. You know me, I go to Magic Johnson's. You know what I'm saying? I pull up there. Catch a nice little matinee, because it almost feels like a private screening room. Just a few of us, but it's enough of us. And when it's us, it's colorful, right? So there's one moment, I didn't know if it was a ringtone or the score of the film, because it's a certain person, certain demo of person that will have a ringtone that is damn near 32 bars of ringtone. Do you understand? And it's like, they got to let that whole shit play out damn near to the bridge before they even attempt to pick up the phone, right? And it's a certain demo. And my man, see, this is the beauty of being in Magic Johnson's. I wasn't the only person that felt this way, but somebody in the crowd wasn't that big. It's probably maybe 15 of us total or whatever. But somebody in the crowd was like, anybody old and black, turn your phone off. That was funny as hell. And it was app. You know, whoever it was, they got to it, you know. But it was a good time, man. I enjoyed that. I definitely recommend. I highly recommend it. You know, so check that out. Is God Is really good. Black movies cracking, picking up. It's a few. That's coming. I Love Boosters is coming out next week. Boots Riley latest film, with Kiki Palmer, Lakeith Stanfield. I forget who else. It looked like it's a loaded cast. I'm going to be honest with you. Judging by the trailer, it looked a little too weird for my taste. I like Sorry to Bother You a lot. I forget the name of the Amazon Prime show off the top of the head. I can't think of the name of the Amazon Prime show that Boots had. But I don't even think I finished that. That joint was a little weird. And this here looks left. I'm going to go see it because I rock with Boots. I really rock with Kiki Palmer. Lakeith Stanfield's a hell of an actor. So, I mean, you know, it has all the ingredients to something good, but it could go left. But, you know, he one of those cats that he's earned it now, even with the work with the coup, he's earned it. Like, you know what? Let's rock out. You got the, I'm a try to engage your vision, see where it goes. So I'm looking forward to that. I'll probably be talking about that next week. That's what's going on cinema-wise, TV-wise. The Chi is coming back this weekend. It's a lot of TV out here, man. I'm like, I just realized I never finished DTF St. Louis. I think I'm going to go back to that. I never finished that. I never finished Paradise. I might go back to that. Speaking of Sterling K. Brown, I might go back to that. Both of them kind of, Paradise more than DTF, kind of just lost my attention. So many different things to watch. I started watching Nemesis. That's the latest TV show by Courtney Kemp, you know, of Power fame, the Power cinematic universe. She created a whole new show, Nemesis. And I might have watched about four episodes. It's pretty good. I'm enjoying it so far. Solid cast. I'm trying to think who's on the cast. Matthew Law plays Isaiah Styles. I don't think I've ever seen Matthew Law before. He looked like a young Shamar Moore. I don't know if I've ever seen him in anything else. Cleopatra Coleman. I don't know if I've ever seen her before. Alain Noel, I've definitely seen. I don't know where I've seen him. Gabrielle Dennis, I seen her in a Black Lady sketch show back in the day. And on and on and on and on and on. And there's some other cats. Some cats that's like, oh, I know this cat from somewhere, but I don't know exactly where. But so far, it's all right. It's all right. I'm enjoying it. I've heard some people kind of call it power light. I don't know if I would say that. But it's just, it definitely has that Courtney Kemp to it. That she even got some of the people from the Power Universe. Sax pops up in the joint. Not as Sax, but my man that plays Sax, he's in there. They got Scott Verner, you know, Broke Mogul on the sound, you know, music supervisor. That's kind of cool. It's set out in Cali. So it's interesting to see, like, you know, just Cali culture. Like, they got, like, a real sunny Thanksgiving, you know? Like, stuff like that. Like, that was kind of cool. So, basically, it's about, if you haven't seen it, it's basically about the lead character, Isaiah Styles. He's a detective. And just like most detectives, the detective trope is the guy that's, like, so highly consumed with his job, in particular, a certain case, that he can't be reined in by anything, by the expectations of his family, by the parameters of the job and or his boss saying, yo, you're doing too much. He's just got a hair up his ass. You know, I got to solve this case. You don't see it like I see it. You know, one of those. You know, you've seen this. You've seen this trope forever, ever since Die Hard and before. So he's trying to find this one burglary outfit, four-man burglar crew who's been, you know, kind of on a tear throughout Los Angeles. And the crew is headed by Coltrane, who's played by Alain Noel. And, you know, it's that. He's over, and Isaiah's over the top. Bit of an asshole for sure. Like, he's just, because he don't see nothing. He's so, like, he got blinders on. He don't give a fuck about nothing. So when you see him, like, just kind of egging his kid and his wife, like, yo, look, I, you know what I mean? I see y'all, but I don't see y'all. I recognize y'all as family, and I know I probably should be a little bit more invested in y'all. You know what I mean? I should be, but honestly, man, again, I think I got a hunch. I got a lead. Like, there was one part where he just got mad at his family and went to go fight crime. You know what I mean? That was his idea. Like, let me go get a cigarette. Now, fuck that. Let me go tail some suspects. You know, so it's just a lot. And then I'm not going to lie to you. I do find myself rooting for the underdog. I mean, not the underdog, but for the bad guy. So I always if nobody is doing anything super heinous, you know what I'm saying? You robbing people, getting, you know, nobody. Well, a couple people might have died, but, you know, unfortunately. But, you know, I'm rooting for the bad guys. I like a lot of the newer black shows where they showing, like, affluent blacks or blacks with a little bit of means, because then you get to see, they get to, like, the set designers get to showcase black artists and stuff like that. That's kind of cool. Isaiah got a whole lot of, they got an array of Jordans, which also kind of begs to mind this theory that I've had, this thought that I've had, that, like, damn, I mean, you know, I've said quite a bit, like, Nike's looking real bad out here, you know, stock prices is plummeting, and just culturally, Nike is, even more specifically, Jordan. Is Jordan officially the Unk sneaker? You know? Like, I ain't gonna lie, I got quite a few Jordans, but I've been an Unk for 26 years. But, like, is Jordan now the Unk kick? Yeah, I'm kind of whispering it because it's hard to accept. You know? folks, they mess with it here and there, but I see a lot of young cats out there with the Asics on and Salomons and New Balance and, you know what I mean? The Jordan, is it a old head indicator? Anyway, so I see my man Styles, who's a cop, rocking the Jordans, you know. That's a concern as you get older. For me, I don't know. As a black man sometimes in the community, you're just like, I hope I'm aging cool, and I hope I don't look like a chaperone and or a cop. You know what I mean? I hope I don't look like undercover police. Hope, you know what I mean? But it is what it is. That's just an aside. Anyway, if you watch Nemesis, let me know what you think. Let me know. Tap in with me. I think it's about that time. You know what time it is. We're here to talk about Euphoria. Let's get this little Euphoria recap, notes and everything else, how I saw it. This is, what episode is this? Oh, side note. Cool thing about Nemesis, at least the first two episodes, maybe further than that, but the first two episodes are directed by Mario Van Peebles. I thought that was really dope. So yeah, episode 6, season 3, episode 6, Euphoria, Stand Still and See. This was a interesting episode. You know, we left on the cliffhanger last week with Rue up to her neck and a lot of drama, literally and figuratively. You got Alamo galloping down the hill with the polo mallet ready to I don't even know what they do in polo, but he's ready to crack a melon. You know, overall, I think from what I've seen, the overarching theme in this episode is, what the people are looking for. Rue wants a new start and wants to be forgiven. Cassie out here just trying to survive. And we now understand why Alamo is so paranoid, you know? Justice for Preston. Never forget the little Alamo, played by the kid Karan Jaden Coleman, who got busy. He did his thing. So it opens up with Alamo as a kid. And, you know, he's just talking about, it's kind of tracing back to his childhood, to what shaped Alamo. And basically, I guess Rue narrates a story about young Alamo living with his mother, who's played by Danielle Deadwyler. You may have seen her in, what was that, The Piano? And a lot of things, but, you know, she's doing her thing on this one. She plays Alamo's mom's real pretty lady, you know, and they live alone, the two of them. And it sets it off with, you know, Alamo's mom saying, listen, I'm dating this guy. He ain't the most, he's not the best looking dude, but he's a good dude for us. So I need you to, you know, need you to be nice to this man, to, you know, like to play nice with him, to respect him and, you know, look him down the eye and, you know, and show him some respect. You know what I'm saying? Like, again, he, you know, he's a good look for us. So she has that whole preamble. This guy could help us with our lives. You know, because I guess they kind of struggling, I guess. You don't really see how bad they struggling, but, you know, they're not doing all that well. So anyway, Preston comes in. Preston is burnt all up along the face, maybe the entire body, but his whole face is real, you know, kind of Freddy Krueger, you know, because he was working at a chemical plant and one of the vats of acid exploded in his face and burnt his whole face up. And, but he comes in he meets little Alamo and he, you know, kneels down to his height, gives him a real handshake. Pleasure to meet you, young man. You know, sits down with him. They watch TV, you know, while Alamo's mom's cooks dinner and he slides him a, you know, a little Hershey bar. Keep this between us. You know what I'm saying? Kind of a little bribery, but, you know, like, let's get in there with your son. You know, I'm here for everybody. So Alamo you know, cautiously starts to take a liking to him because Preston is treating his moms really, really well, you know, and then and he's treating Alamo well. You know what I'm saying? He got a father figure now. They don't really say what happened to Alamo's pops, but he's not around. So anyway, it's a part where he take Alamo to the ice cream man, go get him some ice cream. One of the guys is like, yo, you get that settlement yet? He said, nah, not yet. He said, well, what they did to you, man, they better make you richer than cream. I never heard that one before, but it's slick. But so we realize, you know, Preston got some money on the way. He got a lawsuit. And sure enough, about a beat later, you know, Preston comes home to Alamo and his moms. He passes Alamo's moms a letter. She's like, we rich. And they got paid out. They got paid out. So they start balling, buying all types of shit, all types of furniture and everything. You know, refurnished the whole, redesigned the whole apartment. Damn near gaudy. Isn't this beautiful? Gaudy. Man, gaudy. Definitely, like, we just got some new money. You know, but Preston just so happy to please Alamo's moms and Alamo, right? So they go on a little vacation. And there's a point where I kind of could see something was a little awry, right? There's a moment when Preston was walking from the ice cream truck with Alamo and he was like, yo, I might get so much money, I'm going to put you in a private school. You might have to wear a uniform. You're going to be in a private school with them white kids. You know, which is interesting, right? But he's going to have to wear a uniform. So another point where Preston is talking to Alamo's moms, and she's like, yeah, your mom's just enrolled you into private school. Did they say anything about uniform? She was like, nah, but I'll look into that. Which was kind of, you know, look, if you enrolling a kid into a school and they got to wear uniforms, that's not something that happens on the third conversation. You would know immediately, oh, yeah, no, they definitely said this is a uniform school. So after the fact, I was like, oh, okay, that was a tell. Anyway, and then there's another moment where she's on the phone and she kind of takes the phone in the room, you know what I mean? Kind of like hush, you know? So anyway, long story short, Preston takes Alamo and Alamo's moms out to the beach. You know what I'm saying? And I keep calling Alamo's moms because she's credited as Mama Brown. But takes them out to the beach, you know, for a weekend or whatever. They having a good time. And again, you see Alamo and Preston just kicking it off to the side. And I like that, how he confides in Alamo and he treats him like a man, you know, or a little man. He says, hey, listen, man, I'm thinking about marrying your mother, you know. Do I have your blessing? You know what I'm saying? Alamo's like, yeah, you know. So boom, he said, when we get back, I'm gonna propose to your mom. He said, all right, back. So they in cahoots, they know about it. They get back to the house, walk into the apartment. The apartment is fully not even ransacked. It ain't nothing in there. It looked like they done been evicted. Like, everything is gone. You know, Preston can't believe it. He's shocked. Alamo's moms is bugging, like, oh, no, hell no. She runs into the bedroom, looks, sees her jewelry's gone. She's hysterical, bugging. She's so mad. She's like, she grabs Alamo. She said, we got to break this shit off. You bad luck. I can't be with you. You bad luck. I was like, damn, that's fucked up. You know what I mean? Like, shit. Bad luck, get out of here. She leaves with Alamo. He's like, babe, please. She just leave. So then they pull off, go to a whole nother town, whole nother city, pull up to a dude's spot. They in the elevator, Mama Brown putting on a little bit of perfume, walks up to the door. Door opens, another dude looking like a young Teddy P. You know what I mean? No burns. You know what I'm saying? And pre-accident Teddy P. Anyway, looking like a young Teddy P comes in. And Alamo, come on, Alamo, come on. And Alamo comes in. She's late. She's sitting up with him on the Chase Lounge. She is so into this guy. Alamo takes in the scene. And he starts seeing all of the stuff that was in the apartment with Preston. All of their shit that was allegedly stolen and burglarized. Would you believe this was a setup? Alamo is so dejected, so fucked up. You know, Alamo moms is like, you get over it. You ain't had to kiss his ugly ass. You know what I'm saying? And it hit him like, damn, that was a long con, you know? And from that, he was like, you know, can't trust nobody. I ain't never gonna trust a woman. You know what I'm saying? At all. And sadly, there's a lot of that. That doesn't always get explored. Like your moms or your father seeing them do some dirty shit, it could really fuck with how you view the world. Because your mother or your father is like, that's like a superhero when you're young. You know, that's the first person. That's like ideally the moral authority, or at least the first role model you have. You know, that's in the house. That's the person that gave you life, you know. And if they move a certain way, the disappointment can really become a core memory and can shape how you move through life. So that's what we see. That's what we see with the Alamo storyline. And it shows why the man is so paranoid. So we go to that flashback to present day. Alamo's about to take Rue's head off with the polo mallet, and Rue's like, I can get your money back. I help you get your money back. So that saves her a little bit of time. I don't think he's gonna kill her, but it saves her a little bit of time. She gets on the phone with Faye. You know, Faye. Yeah, she gets on the phone with Faye, and basically she's trying to get into that safe that they got downstairs in the basement, the one that her and Faye were plotting on before Faye fell in love with Wayne. At one point, they was just flirting a little bit, but Wayne stole her heart, you know what I mean, and then turned it to a little bit of Nazi love, complete with a swastika tramp stamp, you know, that he's surprised tattooing on her, on the small of her back. She's like, is it a butterfly? He's like, it's way cooler than a butterfly. And now she got a little swastika on her backside, right above the ass. Anyway, so, you know, Rue is talking about, listen, I need you to take a photo of the safe key next to a quarter for scale. I just need you to do this. Faye is like, Rue's out of sight, out of mind. She cool, but like, let there be some distance. She don't give a damn. She's checked out. She all the way, you know, she's locked in with Wayne. And Rue has to pull the Fez card. Like, come on now, you was a junkie. Fez looked out for you. That was my homie. He looked out for me. I know Fez would do it. Guilts her into it. She's like, all right, bet. She sends her a picture. So that kind of gives Rue just a little bit more time on the clock. So that's setting up what's going on. Rue has to basically create a caper, you know, and Alamo still wants payback from Lori. You know, Lori's crew, they robbed him, so he wants to get his money back, you know. So there's that. So that sets that up. We also see that Maddie and Alamo's business is starting to it's starting to get a little deeper. You know, Maddie is doing her Maddie thing. You know, her creative direction, styling these women, you know, turning them into pinup models and things of that nature. And she actually would like to bring them out into the world to get them on the scene so they could kind of become it girls in the nightlife scene and the culture scene. And Alamo's like, nah, because that would mean that they got to take a day off from the Silver Slipper. And he ain't feeling that. And he feeling like, again, paranoid. He like, yo, she might be gaming me. I can't do it, you know. And he turns to Bishop, who is, man, I mean, come on, dog. The way Darrell Britt Gibson is playing the Bishop role, man, his stoic creepiness is out of here, you know. But there's a moment where he's sitting next he comes over there to where Alamo and Maddie are sitting. And Maddie introduces herself. Hey, I'm Maddie. And Bishop is like, I know. And that's it. You know what I mean? Because he's just a fucking weird dude. But anyway, later on in the conversation, when Alamo's a little, like, kind of paranoid that she might be trying to get over on a Bishop, is like, I don't believe Matty Perez is trying to get over on you. I haven't decided yet, but I don't believe that's true. You know, so there's that. But so there's, that's what's going on. That's kind of brewing with the Matty Alamo partnership. We'll see how far that goes. Rue goes over to meet up with Jules, and she's confiding in Jules, talking about, you know, she feels like she's not responsible for anybody in the world except herself, and she doesn't like that, and she was like to start a family. She wants to have a child and create a life, you know, and basically she wants to start again. She wants to have something to be concerned with that's bigger than her, and she feels like having a child will give a purpose. Now, I'm sure so many people have had kids for a purpose, and who knows if that's really going to give you purpose. You know, you could get a pet first, but, you know, anyway. Jules is, you know, blowing holes in her shit. You know, the thing about the Jules Rue relationship is they're like mirrors of each other, you know? So it's like they kind of call each other on their bullshit a little bit. So Jules is like, so what are you talking about? So now you wanna have a relationship? She's like, yeah, you wanna have a relationship with me? And Rue's like, yeah, I would like to have a relationship with you. You know, when I came back over here, you know, that night that we shared, you know, Jules is like, that was a big fucking mistake. You know what I'm saying? Like, I like what I got over here with my man. You know, she's a sugar baby. And, you know, I don't think that, you know, I just don't trust you. You know what I'm saying? I don't trust you emotionally. You know what I'm saying? And she almost expects more from Rue, which is understandable a little bit. She expects more from Rue than she expects from the sugar daddy, which is understandable because the sugar daddy thing is transactional. And it comes with some money. And he is real explicit about where she stands. He said that in the last episode. He said, listen, I like you, but I love my family, and I won't lose my family over you. So basically, know your position. You know what I'm saying? As long as you can stay cool, stay in that place, you'll be all right, and I'm going to keep blessing you with this bread, and you get to paint to your heart's desire, not think about bills and nothing like that. You know? And Rue kind of throws that in her face. She's like, yo, they're not in a relationship. What are you talking about? You off to the side. She's like, well, his wife knows about me. He's like, yeah, I bet. But you still some little fucking little toy that's just kept to the side, and you paint until he's ready to come over and fuck you. That shit got a little too real for Jules, and Jules slapped the shit out of Rue. Bow, slapped her crazy. Slapped her so hard, she slapped her. The painting fell on Rue. The easel fell on Rue. It was comical a little bit. And then Jules was like, get out of, whatever. Homie's going to be in 45 minutes. Get out of my painting and get the hell out of here. I'm like, damn, she smacked the shit out of her. You know, and then part of me wanted Rue to get her lick back. You know what I'm saying? Like, fuck that. But, you know, Rue stepped off, jumped in the elevator with the quiver lip, you know, and it was sad. You know, that goes back to Zendaya's face acting is just really good. I think it was two episodes ago, the episode where she was getting interrogated by the DEA. She looked like a little kid. Like, she could do that thing to where, like, it turns her back into, like, a kid. And then do the thing to where it's like, you know, she's just out here trying to make it happen. She's just out here just trying, ripping and running, you know. But, like, she's very expressive with no dialogue. You can see a lot in the eyes and how she kind of just contorts her face. It's a talent. Cassie, you know, on her first day on L.A. Nights, her first day on the set as job applicant. This is her big break. This is her big role. She's on set. She's ready to shoot her scene. The Sharon Stone and the director characters are really funny. Real fun. This is a fun role for Sharon Stone. Even though I don't recognize her, I just know that's Sharon Stone now. But, like, this is such a different look for what I know Sharon Stone to be. Like, it's been kind of cool to see this. And then the lady that's playing the director, because they just got her named as Sharon Stone is Patricia Lance. But the director, they just got her credited as director, Colleen Camp. She's funny as hell. She's got some funny lines. So, like, when Cassie comes out, she's like, she's very womanly, you know. And then, you know, she goes to do her scene, and I forget the line that Dylan says to her, but it just kind of, it took Cassie out of it and brought her back to the whole wedding night when Jimenez walked up on, I forget my man's name, but the guy that Nate Oles walked up on him, basically, and that threw Cassie off, and then she went into her own little alt dialogue, you know, just kind of free association, just very way, way, way off script, all the way off script, off book and off script and off the chain. But Sharon Stone and the director are like, let's go with it. Because Dylan is going with it. Dylan's like kind of meeting her where she is. They're improvising. Or at least that's what Dylan thinks. You know, and they doing that. And they're so enraptured in the take that Oceana, who's Dylan's woman on the show, she don't even get cued. She's like, is someone going to cue me? And then the director's like, come on. So she comes in and they do their whole thing. And then, like, they cut. Dylan's like, was that improv? Cassie, you know, she bugged out. She don't even know what to do. Lexi looking at this whole shit like, see, this is Cassie. This is the type of shit. We could have avoided all of that. But for whatever reason, they're really into it, right? So then Patricia's like, I want to talk to that actor. So they bring Cassie back, you know, in the back. And it's Cassie, Patricia, Lexi, and the director, and they're sitting around the table, and they're asking her this, like, Patricia's like, how long have you been acting? And Cassie's like, you know, I guess all my life. And Lexi's like, have you? You know what I mean? Like, fuck out of here, have you? Lexi a bit of a hater, but not really. Lexi is just tired of being in Cassie's shadow and seeing Cassie kind of skip ahead just by the seat of her pants or just by how good she looked, you know? Like, Lexi out here, like, working hard, 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 doing, she's an overachiever and feels like she's just getting by, you know? Whereas Cassie's, it just comes to her. She just falls into all of these opportunities. So anyway, Lexi's like, well, she's been on OnlyFans, kind of, I guess, to defame her. And they were like, OnlyFans? Isn't that site? I think that's the director says that. And then they were like, yeah, she tell her what you do. You know, she's like, she does J-O-I. They like, what is J-O-I? It's like jerk off instructions. And then the director's like, they need instructions? That shit was funny as hell to me. But they're even more enamored with Cassie. They're like, oh, wow. It's like Clute with Jane Fonda. Yeah, I mean, we just talked about Clute not too long ago. So Patricia's like, man, I'm really feeling you. I want to keep you around. You know, she look at, they spinning OnlyFans as the new feminism. Lexi's like, it's debatable, you know. But they spinning that shit as the new feminism. And they're like, you know what? We want to see more from you. We want to see more from this character. Lexi's like, well, this is a job applicant. It's like, no, we're gonna expand the storyline. But what we need you to do is to delete your OnlyFans. Basically, we're trying to save you. We're gonna give you an out. And what do you think? Cassie's kind of like, I don't know. Patricia's like, well, the answer is, yes, I will, and thank you. So then, you know, she agrees to it. And then they go back to this scene where Cassie's at the house and she has to, you know, delete her OnlyFans. So it's a lot of drama building up to her, you know, having to hit that fucking button that just cancels the whole shit. And it's like, listen, once you hit this button, it's going to be like you've never existed here. All your data, you know, the internet shit, all your data, everything is gone. You ain't going to have no stream of income. You were getting money, but now you're basically cashing out and moving your chips over to LA Knights. Is this what you want to do? And Cassie is ready to do it, but now she's nervous. She calls Nate. Nate's not picking up the phone. and that's for good reason. But anyway, ultimately, she presses the button, boop, and it just disappears. And it's very anticlimactic. It was real funny because it was like all of this drama. But at the end of the day, look, if you ain't going to do it, somebody else is going to do it. That was the reality of the situation. All right, you out the game, you know. And that's it. That's all you get is, all right, if you want to sign up again, you can. But right now, we don't even know you. So that's that. Patricia offers Lexi the opportunity to write out Cassie's storyline. So at first, Lexi's kind of taken aback. You want me? She's like, yeah, act like you've been here before. You know what I'm saying? Like, yeah, you got it. So she's kind of, I don't know, kind of in charge of Cassie's fate on the show. She's sitting at the outside the courtyard, the apartments that they all, well, her and Cassie live out. And she's talking to her homegirl, Gilly. I guess Gilly might write on the show with her or whatever, but she's like, yo, you got to kill her off. You know, they sipping white wine and dipping watermelon in it, which is different. It's interesting. It's interesting. I ain't going to lie to you. It's weird, but it's interesting. Gilly is played by Gideon Adlon, which is Pamela Adlon's daughter, which is another one of Pamela Adlon's daughter. You know, Odessa Zion is one of Pamela Adlon's daughters. And they both out here getting to it. Odessa Zion was in I Love L.A. and Marty Supreme, you know. And Pamela Adlon, you know, she played Louis C.K.'s homegirl or wife. Or girlfriend on Louie. She might have even been on Lucky Louie. She had her own show, Better Things. But it's kind of interesting. Like, she's got two daughters that are, like, in the game doing their thing. So that's kind of slick. Some Nepo babies. But so that was that. There's also a scene where Rue is in the church, and she gets a call from mom. She's thinking it's the DEA, so she picks it up. What's up? And it's actually her real mother. And then she kind of just, you know, pouring her heart out to her mom, saying, listen, I just want salvation. I want forgiveness. I want to start all over, you know, all of that. And you see her mom's finally at the other side of the phone, like, you know, I love you, Rue. And it's, you know, and it's just like, oh, it was nice. But at the same time, you damn, is that the only line Nika King is going to get for this whole season? Shit. That's what she came in for? Fuck. I love you, Rue. Okay, let's do it again. I love you, Rue. No, let's do it again. Okay. I think I got it this time. Anyway, so that's that. We also, Cassie gets a FedEx box. Nate's finger sent to the FedEx box with a note that says, answer the phone. So it's funny that neither one of them could get the other on the phone. And shit, Nate really, it's dire over on Nate's side. Nate's storyline is almost like a cartoon at this point. Because every time they go to Nate, he's just getting his ass whipped. Like, Jimenez is coming over there, beating shit out of him. But there's a moment where Nate runs into the, he jumps in and starts stomping out the little endangered flowers that are basically wrecking his construction plans and killing his money and got him in debt. So he's stomping them. And he's got the cleanest pair of Golden Geese sneakers I've ever seen. I've never liked Golden Geese sneakers. I never understood it. I remember years ago, I was dating this girl. And she was like a fashion girl, you know. She was very tapped into fashion. So she was the first one to have them. So I was like, this is some of that fashion shit that I just don't get. You know what I mean? I get it's fashion, you know. But pre-distressed, dirty sneakers, I that shit is never... I can't understand that shit at all. It doesn't jibe with my system. And anyway, that was an aside. Lastly, I guess the last beat, Faye sent the photo of the key. The key was 3D printed by one of Alamo's guys. Rue gives the key to Alamo. Alamo gives the key back to Rue. It's like, yo, you got to make it happen. So now Rue got to go back out there to Lori's spot and basically cracked safe somehow, some way. So she's on her way. She's driving in the desert. And her Bible on CD is skipping or something. So she goes down to see what's going on. and she takes her eyes off the road, and she looks up just in time to see that, oh shit, she's about to have a head-on collision with like a Mack truck. So she swerves off the highway and somehow ruins the car to the point to where now the car is out of order. You know, the car's broken down, smoke all over the place. It's like Rue can't catch a break at all. Now she's in the middle of the desert, no vehicle. And then she turns to the side and she just sees a tree on fire, which kind of is like an allusion to the burning bush, which is, I had to look it up, but it's like the burning bush signifies Exodus 3, which is the divine presence of God. And that's been an overarching theme with a lot of the characters, particularly Rue. You know, Rue feels like God is the person that got her working with, got her away from Lori and got her to Alamo. You know, she's trying to turn her life over. She wants salvation. She wants forgiveness. You know, so it's, and that's how it goes off. You know, shout out to my man Jay Washington. He plays the Silver Slipper bouncer. I just realized he's on there. He's a stand up. We've worked together. It's good to see him out there getting his shit off. But yeah, that was a good episode, I think. I enjoyed it. Let me know what y'all thought. Were you a fan? Did you have fun with it? You know, whatever. Let me know if I left anything out. Let me know if you're still invested. You know what I'm saying? Yeah, it's pretty good. Still haven't seen Storm Reid. I don't know if that's ever going to happen. Coleman Domingo, you know, again, there's so many people on the cast. So it's just like, shit, maybe you get one shot, one scene, but we'll see. So far it's been all right. I'm enjoying it. I like the show. This is early, but this just announced. This is early. DC area, Arlington, Virginia. I'm coming back out to the Arlington Draft House September 20th, 9:20. Shout out to my man Claude the janitor. If you know, you know. 9:20, that's a Sunday night, 7 p.m. I'm going to put that ticket link up ASAP. It might be up now, DamianLemon.com. But everybody in that DMV area, I'm coming back down there. We had a great time last time. Come through for sure. That's it. You know, it was always good. Trust me, I'm sweating like a deacon that is, it's ridiculous. Sweating like a Southern Baptist, like at a Southern Baptist church, man. This little mason jar of water ain't really doing it. I can't wait to crack this AC. So with that, I'm just going to say, as always, tell a friend to tell a friend. Tell even an enemy. Begin the conversation. Conversations.